Hey everyone, it's No Way Friday once again, and holy smokes people, Letterkenny is in the house tonight. This week's special guest is my great friend, Andrew Herr. Andrew is best known for the feature films Story of a Girl, Adventures in Public School, and of course, most famously, his role as Jonesy on the hit show Letterkenny. Andrew is just one of the most kind people that I've had a pleasure working with and is such a funny talent. Look out this year for a new season of Letterkenny on Crave and Hulu. And this fall, the cast is going on a live tour. Yes, a live show with live people. Go to www.letterkenny.tv for tour dates to see if they're coming to a city near you. It's a hilarious show, and this is a hilarious episode. Now, let's go to the movies. Hey, you look familiar.
Andrew Herr is back. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. And when I say back,
yeah, because it's the first time for them.
It's the first time for everybody else. For us, we were actually talking before the episode, and Andrew sweetly texted me right before coming on. He's like, should I pretend that I've never been here before?
He could do it too. He could have pulled it off. He's a great actor.
For everybody that's out of the loop, which is everybody,
like Mike.
No one else, and Mike.
Maybe just me.
We had Andrew on, and this is his second time. So number one, I'm going to start with a big thank you to you, Andrew, for being here a second time and agreeing to do this silly show once again. I would say that Andrew was part of our pilot run of this show. So again, thank you, Andrew, for being part of that, because your episode, which is, you know, I should say it, it's Holes, the movie Holes. We had a great time. It was a lot of fun. And thankfully he's back here, because we wanted a second go round basically to get what we call now the No Way podcast.
It was so much fun. Like it wasn't hard to convince me to come back. It was a ton of fun. But yeah, it was, you know, I have to admit I probably lost that. Holes had, turns out, a lot of plot holes, and it didn't make a lot of sense, but it was fun.
Yeah, that was one of the big things. Honestly, doing the show with you in our early days was one of the days we realized that we had to kind of take a step back and adjudicate what this fucking thing was, because we realized that we were just so aggressively trying to beat you, and that's not a very welcoming environment for anybody to join and talk about films. So yeah. We're a much, much more friendlier environment now, and we brought Smiley Mike over there along for the ride, because he's such a charmer and so friendly.
I'm so fucking easy, man. Like, you give the weakest argument and I'm like, he's got a great point.
Yeah, he's
got Andrew and I go way back. Way back meaning high school. I was 18, 17, you were 18 or 19, and we met originally at the Stratford School of Shakespeare in Stratford, Ontario, doing a six-week program, an intensive theater program for Shakespeare, one summer. And we spent 6 weeks together. We studied Shakespeare. What was your experience with that? Because I remember last time when you were on, you talked about how theater to you was kind of new. Acting was a bit new at that point in your life.
Yeah, it was really new. So I moved to Kingston, Ontario, going into grade 12. My friend Christina Miller got me interested in acting with the Sears Drama Festival, and then my guidance counselor at the time, Len Whalen, who's a, love him to death, he honestly, I don't think I'd be an actor if he didn't, like, he used to be a professional stage actor and wanted to help me get into acting school. He brought up this Stratford Shakespeare Theater Intensive. I was like, oh, that sounds cool. Helped me audition for it. And I've been playing hockey up to that point. I guess I wasn't a full-blown jock, I'd like to say now in hindsight. Maybe I was at the time.
Just like a half-blown jock? What's a half?
Yeah, I was like, I like to read books, and I was, I had other interests, but I wasn't like so gung-ho on hockey all 24/7. But I did remember, I had a blast at the Stratford Shakespeare Festival, but I definitely felt very out of my element. like everyone was so good. Like Markian stood out right away as he did that monologue about smoking for the first time. That was, you know, blew me away.
Thank you.
I was like, oh, it was, dude. I mean,
turned out it was just a confession. It wasn't even a monologue.
I'm really curious about this one.
Just to give some background on that too. So it doesn't sound like we had to, one of our activities, very a la theater school, was to take a painting and then make a monologue out of a painting.
It was great. Like I knew I was in the right place because everyone was like really, really good. But I was at the same time like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. But I did. I think I learned rather quickly, I guess. And it was great. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, it was. It kind of set, I think, us all up on a trajectory to become actors. I would say the majority of people, there was about 16 of us, 17 of us, are still in the business and are still working pretty consistently, including yourself with Letterkenny, which is incredibly successful. I want to bring it up every time because I encourage everybody to go watch it, but I'm just so proud that Canadian show and you guys, what you've created there, is so successful and being celebrated so wildly in Canada, and we have to lift up all of our Canadian content creators. So cheers. Yeah, cheers to that show and its success. And is that what you're filming right now?
We are filming right now, yeah. And it's been good to be back, man. Last season, I mean, Jared said it himself, that last season he thought it was a bit of a dud. I wouldn't go as far as to say it was a dud. It just wasn't as funny as the previous seasons. But this season is a banger. It's going to be really, really, really funny. So we're back, baby.
We're back.
And it's been a wild ride. Yeah. It's just so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. Like, all I say is, Riley and Jonesy try to become famous on a new popular app that's been happening recently. And the reason why we're doing it is just totally absurd. So it's been fun.
Is it LinkedIn? It's LinkedIn, right?
LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn. Yes, LinkedIn. Yeah, yeah. Okay. If you know Riley and Jonesy, they're all, yeah, yeah, they're on LinkedIn.
Just making all these business contacts. We're going to blow up.
Bits aside, if some characters tried to get LinkedIn famous, that's hilarious.
That's a great idea.
That is a good idea.
I think we should try it as a podcast.
How many business contacts can I get? Like, I want so many business contacts, so many connections. Andrew, what movie have you brought to us today?
We also got to be clear. We're not doing Holes again.
No.
We're not going to do a take two. Oh, Mike prepared the wrong show. Sorry, bud.
Shit.
So we're not doing Holes.
I stuck on the Shia train, though. I chose Disturbia.
Hoo boy.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
But I also love, too, Andrew, that you've brought two not only Shia movies, but kind of like Shia being unfairly punished and confined to a place. That's like...
Yes.
It's like justice for Shia. He's got a real big like justice for Shia bone.
Does Fury count because he's stuck in the tank?
Yeah, that was
actually, self-imposed.
That's the next one.
Okay, you're all set to go nowhere.
Disturbia was released on April 13th, 2007. It runs 105 minutes. It was written by Christopher Landon and Carl Ellsworth and directed by DJ Caruso. So DJ's known for Eagle Eye, another Shia LaBeouf movie, the XXX series with Vin Diesel, and a movie I Am Number 4. Disturbia was produced by DreamWorks. It had a budget of $20 million and it did $118 million worldwide. Pretty successful movie at the time. It was also produced by Ivan Reitman. It stars Shia LaBeouf as Kale, Sarah Romer as Ashley, Carrie Ann Moss as Kale's mother Julie, David Morse as Mr. Turner, Viola Davis as Detective Parker, Jose Pablo Cantillo as Officer Gutierrez.
Your Spanish teacher? He's my cousin.
After his father is killed in a car accident, things unravel for Cale Brecht, and he is placed under house arrest for punching his Spanish teacher. Having nothing better to do, Cale occupies himself by spying on his neighbors. But one night, he witnesses what appears to be a murder going on in Mr. Turner's house. Cale becomes obsessed with uncovering the truth behind these murders, but after a few unsettling run-ins with Mr. Turner, it becomes a matter of life and death. And the ominous question, who is watching whom?
I'm Robert Turner. I live behind you.
Hey, I'm curious with all your facts there.
Yeah.
Is it acknowledged anywhere or assumed, like, because it's like a remake of Rear Window, the Hitchcock film. Like, but do they acknowledge that?
So that's part of my fun facts here, Kayvon, that I'm about to get into.
Yeah, that's more of a fun.
Strap in for the fun.
Kayvon, come on.
Gosh, stealing my thunder here.
I always forget about your fun facts. Okay, yes, go ahead.
Here's a fun fact for you, Kayvon.
Thank you.
The copyright holders of Cornell Woolrich's short story, It Had to Be Murder, which Rear Window was based on, sued DreamWorks, Paramount Pictures, and Steven Spielberg for using the story without permission. So in 2010, a federal judge actually dismissed the suit, ruling that the main plots are similar only at a high, unprotectable level of generality. Where Disturbia is rife with subplots, the short story has none, the setting and the move and the mood of the short story are static and tense, whereas the setting and the mood of Disturbia is more dynamic and peppered with humor and teen romance.
Is that a judge's ruling? Is that the wording that the judge used?
Yes, that's the judge.
He was a fan.
Yeah, apparently.
He liked the movie. He loved it.
Not on my watch.
No.
Yeah. On the podcast because we know what movie he's been in. Yeah.
He made a similar statement on Holes, too. He also was.
Mr. Brecht, I just got you a break. Don't test me.
One more fun fact here for you. Apparently, David Morse, so Mr. Turner, did not speak to Shia or any other of the teens on set. And LaBeouf said, when we finished filming, he was very friendly, but he's a method actor, and as long as we were shooting, he wouldn't say a word to us.
Well, I'm officially welcoming you to the neighborhood.
That's kind of like the story on Joseph Gordon-Levitt was talking about working with Daniel Day-Lewis on Lincoln, and like Daniel Day-Lewis, the method of method actors. And they were like, what is it like working with him? And he was like, well, it was weird at first because like he's Lincoln. You can't call him Daniel Day-Lewis, you have to say Mr. President. He was like, at first it was weird, but then he was like, but we figured out that if we just started doing some like Civil War jokes, he was a great time. So as long as they were like a time appropriate, so they'd be like, oh man, those rebels, hey, they're the worst. And he'd be like, ah, yes, the Southern rebels.
That's so good.
I admire your zeal.
It has a current 69% on the tomato meter. I'm going to quote here what the New York Times said. They say Disturbia will never be accused of undue originality, but its adherence to genre conventions works in its favor. Instead of manufacturing elaborate, ridiculous plot twists, questionable, or imposing overwrought psychological melodrama on a basically absurd premise, Mr. Caruso and the screenwriters Landon and Ellsworth opt for efficient, clever B-movie execution. There are no big surprises, but the jumps and jolts are well-timed and the overall mood is at once grisly and good-natured, more diverting than disturbing.
The auto show.
That's right.
The auto show. Big car fan, huh?
All right, that's it.
The auto show.
Let's go.
Andrew, do you remember the first time that you saw this movie and your memories kind of surrounding that?
Yeah, I saw it in Kingston at the movie theaters with my brother. And I remember it caught me at a time where it's such a simple movie in a lot of ways, but I had actually been watching all the Alfred Hitchcock movies at the time as well. And I knew immediately it was like a Rear Window remake at the time. And I just, I mean, I'm a huge Shia LaBeouf fan. I just remember like, it just reminded me so much of like the cheese ball, like get the hot girl when you're like locked inside, like kind of the nerd guy. And I loved it. I just remember I was like, I bought in. I was like, oh yeah, this movie is like, it's simple. It's not, I'm not gonna like have like these life epiphanies coming out of it, but I was thoroughly entertained. And then there was a stretch where I was watching it a lot. Like I'd be doing homework. I'd be doing like, I remember I went on iTunes. Like I have like 30 plus views on iTunes. You know, iTunes used to track how many times you've watched a movie. So I know for sure I've watched it like 30 times at least. And sometimes I'd be doing homework or sometimes it was just like background noise, but it became like a comforting item to me. For some weird reason.
Yeah, we gotta unpack that. That's a really weird ambient mood to set for yourself.
Were you on house arrest?
Yeah.
No, like, why? No.
Just psychologically. Just locked in there.
Just locked.
Shia's got a fucking ankle collar on you, and if you go too far, he pulls you right back.
Do it! Just do it!
a pretty weird one to be a comfort movie for somebody. I mean,
but it's interesting you mention about like the nerdy sort of campy get the girl locked in your house kind of thing. Because when we were talking about the film, I've never seen this film. This is twice now you've given me two Shia films I'd never seen. I never saw Holes either.
Seen Holes?
No, I didn't. I was a little too old.
Have a childhood, Mike. Okay, like I came out. I was like this already.
Yeah, I just came out.
Do you wish? Do you wish you could Men in Black yourself and forget Holes? Or
no, I like that I carry that. But one of the things that we talked about in discussing the film is that there's a kind of a fantasy factory going on in like a teen boy thing where like you're a nerdy kid locked in your room fantasizing, and then you get the girl, you beat the villain, and you save your mommy. It's like a 12-year-old wet fantasy dream. He punches a teacher. You're right, Mike. You're like, yeah, punch a teacher. Awful. I was a nerd. I got the girl. I beat up the bad guy, and my mommy loves me. Like,
I think I'm going to need to go to therapy after this.
No, this is it. This is your therapy.
This is where we unpack.
Maybe. On the way back here, your mom was saying how much she likes eating out.
Hmm. Was she?
Did you have a hot neighbor? Did you have your version of the character of, is it?
Ash? No, I wish. No, I definitely didn't.
Really?
No.
Did any of you?
No.
Yeah, I did.
You had a hot neighbor?
I had two.
I was like, I had a hot girl across the street. Oh my gosh, I tried to play basketball anytime I knew she was like heading out.
Yeah, exactly. It brings out the boyish qualities of like that, like early, like teen years, you know?
Oh yeah.
Did you wear basketball shorts as a lot as a kid, Mike?
Oh dude, the long story short of that, yes, until we've all experienced this, guys. I mean, we're four guys doing a podcast right now. You go to that school dance, you wear your basketball shorts, and you're like, I can never wear them again.
You wore basketball shorts to a school dance?
Yes, because it was like cool to wear basketball shorts
to the dance.
Absolutely. Dude, when was that cool? Where'd you go?
I was a basketball. Vagina. Okay, one, this is probably like 2002.
Oh, my.
Next, okay. Regina, Saskatchewan. I played basketball. Like, me and my friends were, like, basketball kids.
But what the game wasn't going on at the dance. You didn't have to go in your
basketball
uniform.
Basketball shorts was the least fucking weird thing going on. The DJ would throw us hair gel, and we'd all grab it. We'd run to the washroom, spike our hair, and then come back out to the dance. Like
that, like, DJ would do that? That's
wait, was it
sound.
Colored? Was it colored gel?
No, it was ice spiker gel.
This is also the same school that you told us had the milk chugging contest.
That was my high school. My went to are fucked.
You're a jackass.
So, Andrew, we've come to the part of the podcast where we do our elevator pitch.
So picture this really nerdy kid who goes through a lot of trauma, and he's forced to be on house arrest. And then he ends up being the most badass motherfucker in the end, gets the girl, and he saves the neighborhood.
So much for being spatially challenged.
But does he save his mommy?
Is there any mommies?
He saves his mommy, too. Oh. He saves his mommy.
Boom.
Give him the money. Give him the mommy money.
He saves the mommy. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
All right, before we jump into the meat of the episode and start our No Way journey with Disturbia, we have to establish our givens. These are the elements of this film and world that we are going to accept. The first one is the technology. We're just going to accept all of the video camera, cell phone, Kale for some reason, all of them are like hackers / MacGyver. They can make very interesting wireless camcorders before the technology existed, whatever. The second given is Mr. Turner, who was the killer's underground lair in his suburban home. Near the end of the film, the climax, we get to go inside the murderer's home. And for some reason, somehow, Mr. Turner has an Indiana Jones level lair beneath a suburban home. There's a cavern. Yeah. There's a water pit. There's
He's
like
got
a
his
maze
own
system.
Temple of Doom.
It's a full Temple of Doom. It makes no sense in engineering or architecture. So we're accepting his lair. The only other thing that I have an issue with, which is just funny to me architecturally, is we see his murder room, which is that thing that's between the house and the garage. And then in the murder room, there's a hidden door to the basement. Once you're in the murder room, what are you hiding?
Yeah.
You made it. You made it. I mean, if I was building a house, I think having a secret room is a lot of fun.
Okay. We'll unpack that on another episode.
Yeah.
This is my no-no room.
Round one.
Okay. So, where the fuck am I? No, I'm looking. I need a little something here for my notes.
One second. Don't edit this out.
The tedious mutterings of Kayvon.
That's the name of that should be the name of your solo podcast.
Tedious mutterings.
Mutterings of Kayvon.
Pretty good, actually.
That's pretty good.
Tedious mutterings with Kayvon.
It's just it's Kayvon mic'd up like the NHL, but all day. You're just
yeah.
It's like
yeah. You just hear me on a bus. Well, that guy doesn't have a mask on. Well, that's not good. Okay, so round one. We're actually going to be moving pretty far into the film. We're going all the way to 56 minutes into the film. As Markian pointed out in the synopsis, clearly we have our lead character, Kale, who's been put under house arrest. So Kale has begun investigating the neighbor and has built a relationship with his female neighbor, Ashley, and with his help of his friend, Ronnie.
I really, really like your neighborhood.
The three of them are looking into Mr. Turner. Ashley's the new girl in town, and she meets some local teenagers and decides to throw a house party, which Kale can't go to.
Everybody's coming.
Yeah, no, I got it. So now you got the whole jock and bimbo population showing up.
So we're going to go to 56 minutes, and the clip we're watching is going to be showing Kale throw a tantrum because he can't go to the party and he's jealous. And then there's a confrontation between Kale and Ashley.
Whenever you're leaving your room, you grab the doorknob and you turn, you're getting ready to leave, but you don't. You stop and you back up and you turn to the mirror and you stare at yourself.
That's either the creepiest or the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
So don't make me wait. Yeah, okay, so.
Don't make me wait. They are kissing.
I couldn't wear basketball shorts when I watched this movie, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I know. There goes the shorts again in the shame pile.
Did you notice Shy is wearing basketball shorts?
Shame pile in the no-no room. Okay, so my no way is somewhat of a psychological question, a question of character. I think there's no way, based off this guy's invasive voyeurism, his tantrum that he has at her having a party, telling her she's conforming because she's making friends.
All right, well, that'll be fun. I just didn't think you would conform so fast. But
and then revealing that he has been aggressively observing her, not like peripherally when she's in the shower, like in the shower, in the pool, but like he's observing to a level where he's seeing the fine, small details of her personality and looking in the mirror.
You do this thing where it's like an OCD thing, but it's not.
There's no way that this young woman finds this attractive and reciprocates feelings to this creepo.
Oh, man. I'm like 50-50. Like, I agree with you that the odds are heavily against this type of person revealing as much as he did. It would be incredibly hard. You know, he's, like, we're talking about fantasy. Like, he's fantasized all these things about her. And meanwhile, she's thinking about him maybe 1% of the time. Having this party, already kind of annoyed with him because he challenged her to begin with. And she's trying to have a good time, trying to meet new people in this suburbia that she's just moved into.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
I'm trying to enjoy my party.
And so, yeah, it for her to catch feels for him like that would be probably wouldn't happen. But
this is the part I'm interested in. This is the part I like.
We all lean forward.
But it's Shia LaBeouf. And
no, it's Kale Brecht. It's Kale Brecht.
Kale.
Also, did you just teen Shia LaBeouf?
He's a movie
like,
star.
Come on, he's like the he's pinnacle a, of fucking
come on,
male
he's a
sexiness.
Pinnacle of, yes, I am.
Look at his little chia pet head.
he did it in a way that just maybe she caught the feels in that moment. I don't know what way. You know what? I'm mostly going with no way, but I just want to play a little bit of devil avocado against myself here that.
Did you say devil's avocado?
Devil's avocado? Yeah.
Oh, I'm stealing that for life. That's so brilliant. Good.
Oh, wow.
Devil's that avocado.
Avocado.
I like that a lot. Yeah. I've never heard someone say, I'm going to play devil's avocado.
Avocado against he came from, like, even though he's super creep, he's justified for being a super creep because he has been on house arrest and he's creeping everybody. Thanks, Mike. Maybe
I'm just like, I don't know if being on house arrest gives you free reign to be like, hey, kid, you're on house arrest for 30 days. Here's, you do get a free pass to be a fucking weirdo, though, as a result. In fact, I'm pretty sure the detective says, don't get weird, get some hobbies.
So here's like, here's your leg brace, and here's your complimentary pair of binoculars, and here's a box of Kleenex.
House arrest might sound like a breeze, but I've seen many a folk get a bit loopy after too long, some after just a day or two.
Yeah, I also love to that framing that of like, yeah, the guys, our neighbor's on house arrest. Just he's creeping on everybody right now. That's just what you do when you're on house arrest. You just kind of stare at everybody through binoculars.
But don't you think that the film built up his boredom? She's like, yeah, you gotta, I've seen people go loopy after a few days. I think what I'm saying is she understands why he's creeping, not purely because he is a creep, which obviously he is, but also that he's bored, has nothing to do, is she knows enough to know that he's not a full-on creep, but he's on house arrest, so he's really bored.
I had never thought about what you said there about the fact that, like, she understands and sees the process of his boredom growing. That, like,
yes,
you know, yes, there's empathy in that. It's not just him being a creep for being a creep's sake. He did try other things. He played his video games. He made his Twinkie castle. Yeah, no, I never thought about the fact that she did get to witness the growth of his boredom that led him to, you know, looking around the neighborhood.
Are you spying on the neighbors, Gil?
I'm just trying to, like, also tie in, because we know she has a bad relationship with her parents. It's just where I struggle with what I was about to say was she has a bad relationship with her parents, so she doesn't get the attention that she wants, the details in noticing things as a parent that you should with a child and talk to them, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't get that. So all of a sudden, Kale comes along and notices all these things and notices her, like, you know, if you want to be cheesy, say, I see you for who you are, and I love you for that. You know, so he might be the first person in her life to do that. Where I struggle with that argument of it, of this is a very attractive, confident, very flirtatious young woman that I don't think she's only getting that from Kale. And Shia in this, like, I just don't think that she needs attention. Clearly she's having a party here with I'd say maybe 50, 60 teenagers. Yeah. So clearly she's popular.
Very successfully. Like, it's a great party. She's so, got lots of attention.
Yeah. People are hugging her. She's popular.
Maybe it's like Kale saw a side to her that no one else knows about.
I've seen that you're maybe one of, I don't know, three people in the world that likes pizza flavored chips.
I feel like it came across more sweet than creepy, even though it was really creepy.
Oh, you think I'm watching you? I'm not watching.
I'm
minding my own business.
He's somewhat like gaslighting her to a certain extent, which, I mean, we only have that ability to kind of know that now with our understanding of a lot of how we've evolved. Yeah. But like he, you know, he's observing her from afar. He's hiding. He's not openly doing it. Like, anytime she looks up, he ducks. So there's shame. He knows he's not supposed to be looking. And then she does come over and start hanging out. He is he smells the back of her head very uncomfortably at one point.
And then
when she says, I'm going to have a party, his reaction is not to say, that's really exciting. You're new here. I know it must be really hard to make friends. I'm glad that's happening for you. He's just mad because he can't go, and then tells her that she's conforming. So he makes it about her being at fault versus just acknowledging that he's jealous that he can't go.
Yeah.
Then he throws a tantrum when she comes over and says, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, what are you doing? And he like rips there, have a fight over the iPad.
I'm saying, if you're trying to enjoy your party. Don't keep looking up at me trying to get a rise out of me.
And then she like goes into this weird ass monologue about how much he's been watching her. And she's like, let's fuck. it's hard. So I guess the core of being able to say that this would happen is trying to narrow down then. So what is she missing in her life that she does respond to this behavior?
Have you guys ever made an impassioned speech to somebody like this in this way that's worked?
I did the worst thing ever. It was the most embarrassing thing in the world. Is I wrote a song for a girl in high school. She was older, and I was I was loser in love. And I told her, like, there was people around. I said, hey, I wrote you this song. Can I play it for you? And she was like, yeah, go ahead. Like, I was like, and I thought it was going to be like, we could go somewhere private and I'd play it, in, you know, not in public. And she's like, no, go ahead. And so, like, I did it in front of, like, a bunch of people. And she was like,
oh, no.
She was like, that was lovely, but no, thank you.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, right? Like, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
We so badly need, like, a woman in this podcast right now.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right?
I'm like, Mike, go grab Lauren and just, like, bring her in here to give an opinion on this.
Like, give her the final judgment. Like, just set us straight.
Should I go grab her?
Honestly, I think it might be kind of valuable. I think if everyone's down with this, I think it might be kind of valuable.
So this is Lauren Jackson, my partner.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Lauren.
Okay, so there's tensions flaring, and that seemed like a break in their pattern. So maybe she was just like waiting for a chance to jump in. My impulse is, heck no, where's the door? But she seems kind of lonely and like she doesn't have any friends. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it was like confirmation bias.
Lauren, what if like she knew he was on house arrest? Like she watched him get arrested earlier in the movie. She knows that he's a troubled kid. She's kind of insinuating she's down with like the creep a little bit. And she also knows he's incredibly bored.
Yeah, I think Andrew's question is a criminal record attractive?
But she's also kind of on to the fact that he is watching her.
But for how long? Just tonight?
Not only, I mean, I did, one scene I did catch was her kind of doing, I don't know, yoga or something, or, you know, she takes a look back and she's like, yeah, what's up? I know you're looking at me and I think I'm pretty hot. So I feel like maybe that it does kind of lend itself to a, If so long as you're not like really, really weird, we can make this work. I don't know about being turned on, but I definitely feel like that is the moment where you're like, okay, well, thanks for admitting you're into me. Now we can actually like do something about this.
Interesting. I like that idea that she's just like, I just need confirmation. I just need confirmation that you're into me. Cause right now we're playing a game of chicken, a little bit tiptoe. Are we into each other? Are we not? I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And his personality is just as such, I think that sort of just falls in line with the way he is. And she seems kind of down leading up to that. So
have you ever had a guy do something like that for you?
I had a stalker, so it's a little touchy.
Oh, God.
But, you know, it's actually quite common this week on Common Problems.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Anyway, count on me to take it to Weird Town. But
okay. But, like, clearly in that scenario, and I mean, this kind of goes without saying, but you didn't find that attractive, obviously.
No. Yeah, yeah.
So it's
no, but I, yeah, that was a surprise, though. I mean, I think she's kind of, the crumbs have been laid in this relationship, it feels like.
Yeah, I guess my only issue is, like, the crumbs are there in terms of their tension, but I'm also challenging that it also includes his behavior with this party.
Right, the anger is weird.
And that he manifests his jealousy over the party to try and ruin the party and tell her that there's something wrong with her.
Yeah. Again, like hindsight's 20/20. If that happened to me, I'd be like, woo, you're really interested. And the dial is a delicate one, but.
Well, that's the thing that we were also saying was that we're not, we were all anxious because we're just like, hey, we're four guys talking about whether we think she would do this. We're not trying to say that we think that Shy is a great guy or this character is a great guy and this is great behavior if we say it's a way. It's like they're probably building a very unhealthy relationship. It's just whether or not we think it could happen.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. If I were in that position, I would like to think I'd be like, ooh, no thanks. Especially coupled with that the energy, the anger leading in, you know, it's like, you're a conformist. It's like, okay, great. I love you too. that feels so good to hear. Say it again in different words. So, thanks for allowing me to be a voice of woman.
Voice of reason as well. Voice of reason.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Sorry, I'm not wearing a bra. I love you guys.
Bye. I really think it's a no way. I think in reality, she'd be like, that's fucked, man. Like, You're spying on me. That's fucked.
I'm going to be a no way on it.
I'm going to go way. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's definitely no way.
No way.
Well, shit. What an intense first round. Really got into the gritty, like self-examining our own male bullshit.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Our own backgrounds. And, you know, it's really good, though.
It's good.
It's a great lesson for young men out there. If you're listening, don't voyeur your neighbors and think it's going to work, and don't wear basketball shorts to your dance. It's just not a good idea.
But I mean, they don't even have to these days. Like, now you can just, everyone, it's all online.
Yeah, keep dreaming, perv.
Anyways, let's move on.
Let's move on.
The next no way, I'm going to handle this one here.
Round two.
And so where I'm going to start this clip from, we're going to jump to around a minute, 1 minute into the movie, an hour 13 and about 30 seconds in. Since that scene has happened with Ashley and them kissing and all that stuff, we realize that a little more is happening with Mr. Turner across the street. It gets a lot of attention. That turns into the trio of Ronnie, Ashley, and Kale investigating this again as a group.
What? So the missing girls from Madison? On the news.
You think he has something to do with that?
To the point where they actually send Ronnie with a live stream camera into the garage with the hopes of finding out what's in one of these bags. They assume it's a body.
Oh man, it reeks in here.
What's it smelling?
Like the corpse of a rotting hottie.
And they send Ronnie across the street, and that's where we're going to pick this up.
I can't believe this.
I can't believe you actually buy into this guy's bullshit.
What, after what you
it's
just
bullshit,
called?
Bullshit, Mom.
And everything that's happened this past year, it's a miracle they didn't just take you away.
Okay, so we saw that Ronnie went across the street. He broke into Mr. Turner's house. On the live stream, he disappears. Kale's character gets terrified that Ronnie's in the house with Mr. Turner. He's gone. Maybe he's killed. Who knows what's happened? Maybe he's kidnapped. Kale breaks in. He chases down he goes through the house. He can't find him anywhere. He gets back outside. The police grab him. He even manages to get the police to understand his plea and says, like, look in the bag in the garage.
Okay, there's a body in a blue bag in his garage.
There's a body in it, and they check it out. It turns out to just be a deer's body. Mr. Turner says he hunts, things like that. We're back in Kale's house. He's sitting with his mom. She says she's going to go over there.
I have to go talk to him.
What are you talking about, now?
He goes, there's no way you're going over there.
He could press charges,
now?
Kale.
I don't care if he's going to press...
Sit down!
He goes back upstairs. And my no way is that there's no way that from him getting caught by the police until that moment, no one gives a shit about where Ronnie is. No one is like, man, he is still missing. There's no way that Kale's character does not yell to the police, or at least his mom, Ronnie's still missing, and I think he's maybe dead, or at least like tied up somewhere or something like that. He also has the tape. He has the recording to show that Ronnie is in that house, and he doesn't even try to show them that. That would be 100% proof right there that Ronnie was in the house, and we should go find him. There's no way that no one gives a fuck about where Ronnie went.
Pero quizás mis padres tomarán la compasión en mí.
He hates his best friend. He's his best friend.
Yeah, it's true. I pretty much agree with you that there's no way, if he's your best friend, you think he's been killed, you're not going to say something when the police are right there in front of you.
The impetus for him even going over there was like, Ronnie. Yeah. Ronnie is the reason he went over there.
And if he brought up Ronnie, there would actually be, and he showed that Ronnie was in the house, there would actually be a more in-depth investigation into the house. And then everything that happens after that wouldn't have happened. Because it would, like, they would have had asked more questions about Mr. Turner. Why is he going to your house? Then he would have, and then the camera footage they actually caught, they actually found Ronnie. They look at the footage. They would have found the girl on the footage. There would have been so many more things that happened if he brought up Ronnie. And if it's your best friend, you're going to bring it. If you think your best friend's died or being kidnapped in that house and the police are right in front of you, you're going to say something. You're going to be like,
say something.
You don't care if you get in trouble, he gets in trouble. You're going to be like, all right, everything supersedes. If he's still alive, if he gets in a bit of trouble, I'll take the fall for it, whatever.
Yeah, like, you're like, what are you going to do? Put another ankle bracelet on?
Yeah.
Like,
put me,
fuck, like, hear me out.
Yeah, you would rather be safe than sorry in that situation.
100%.
Where it would be an easy of my friends in that house. And maybe Ronnie is hiding inside and he's alive and he's fine. But I mean, as the cops, I would say my friend's in there. And as Mr. Turner, I would expect of like, yeah, I kind of want to find this guy in my house and get him out of there. Like, I'm not just going to let the police like go away with this kid in my house that I don't know. And who's just like, what, hiding in a closet? We need to find him. Like, get him. Because Kale would say, I didn't see him come out. I saw him go in. Here's the video. You see he's in the house and he has not left yet. And everybody just kind of leaves. And then Kale sits at that table right there and is like pretty chill. Like his friend's fucking dead.
And he's like, Mom, Mommy.
Any good or even close to good human being would not relent on, I have a missing person's case here. it's fine. You can add fines, add time to my incarceration or whatever. But like, until my friend is found, this can't just be let go. I'm going to counter with a way that I think Kale's a bit of a piece of shit. And
I feel like that should just be a given, but
I think he's kind of selfish. I think he thinks about himself a lot. And he also, up until this point, has really demonstrated that he doesn't really care about Ronnie's safety and has been treating him pretty disposable. Yes. Like,
we need to see what's in the blue bag. So get in the car and get the garage door open, all right?
Are you sure I'm still in the clear?
No, go back in the car. No, go back to the house. She's like, I gotta get out of here. I'm scared. No, you're gonna do this. Get the fucking barcode for me. Like, he's kind of using him like a pawn in his game that he wants to play and makes Ronnie do all this shit without thinking about his safety. He doesn't seem that concerned. So I'm just going to kind of counter that he might be that much of a selfish little shit in this moment that he's making it about himself and him feeling persecuted and not believed versus concern about his friend's safety. Now, that said, he does run over there pretty fast when he thinks Ronnie's in danger with that bat. So that does demonstrate some level of urgency.
That might line up with him just wanting to really solve this case, though, right away, too. He's like, I got to fucking in into the house now.
Yeah, he might have saw a chance that he got to bat that guy in the head.
Adrenaline's a weird thing where, like, if you're, like, hopped up on adrenaline, you're not necessarily thinking straight. Now, in this scene, it's like adrenaline would wear off and the police are there. You got a lot of people to talk to. So, yeah, maybe I still think it's no way. But you just never know. Like, people react very strangely to circumstances like this where, like, you've coaxed your friend, your best friend, to break into a house. And then all of a sudden you think he might have been kidnapped or killed. You run over there. You have your ankle bracelet on. The police show up. The police officer who shows up is the guy who fucking hates you already. Well, even though he doesn't... I'm not going to say the police officer hates him. The police officer is pretty chill considering he punched out his cousin. There is like a slim chance that like your adrenaline might just not allow you to think properly in that situation.
Once he realizes that that body was just a deer, there might be a part of him that starts to really question if Mr. Turner is the murderer. And he's like, fuck, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this guy isn't a murderer at all. Maybe we've been being a big asshole to him. Combine that with, no one brought this up yet, but he could actually be not bringing him up to cover his ass. Because Ronnie even says himself, he's like, I didn't say anything. I didn't want to admit to the cops that I broke into a guy's house.
Dude, did you want me to go up to the cops and be like, oh, hey, you know what, officer? He's right. I was in his house.
He might be saying, like, I'm not bringing up Ronnie because I don't want to get Ronnie in shit. I don't want to get Ronnie in trouble for a B&E here. And the only way that would supersede saving Ronnie's life is if he also thinks at that moment, oh, Mr. Turner isn't even the murderer anymore. So the only high stakes here now is, fuck, Ronnie broke into that guy's house and I don't even think that guy's a murderer. I'm not going to bring up Ronnie. I don't need to get him in shit for this. He actually put his
life
on
the line. But doesn't he bring him up right to the cops initially saying my friend's in there?
My friend is in the house. He's kidnapped by the owner of the house who's trying to kill him.
Yeah. Does he?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. But that's before. But that's before the body. But still, you're right.
The first thing he says is my friend's in there.
The cat's out of the bag. Yeah. The cat's out of the bag.
I do think Kale's a bit of a shit and he is very self-serving and he hasn't been very good to Ronnie and he's used Ronnie to do a lot of that stuff without really thinking about Ronnie's safety. He's like, I'm pretty sure my neighbor's a serial killer. Will you go over there and break into his house for me? Like, I don't think that, like, obviously he doesn't have a great deal of respect for Ronnie's well-being, but he does run over there. And what I will say is that Kale's very adamant about wanting to be believed. He wants that respect. And so I think that even if he doesn't care about Ronnie that much, he wants them to believe him. And so I think he would go get that tape and he would keep driving his point home that his friend broke into the house and now his friend is missing, and he wouldn't give it up because he'd want them to believe him. And I also don't think that the police would leave that hanging.
Unanswered.
Yeah. So I'm going to go no way.
I believe. Yeah, I agree with you, Kayvon, that like he'd want to be believed. He'd go show him the tape. But then on the tape, they would see the dead body in the hole.
The hole, the vent.
And then it's the end of the movie. Yeah, I think that's, it's more of a plot device that they don't have this conversation right now.
I think that writers knew they couldn't chase that thread because they'd lose their sweater. So, yeah. You know. Mm.
So it's a no way on my end.
Yeah, I'm no way.
No way.
Double unanimous.
Double trouble.
Wow. This is huge. Double trouble. And we're all coming to a nice consensus. We're on the same wavelength tonight, it seems.
Very different from polls.
Very different.
We've got one round. So we've gone two rounds. They both have gone no way. We've got a third and final round that's going to be Markian's lead. Do we give it the all or nothing treatment?
I think we do. And I think this one's a large one. So I think it kind of has that essence of being double or nothing.
Yeah, I'm cool
with that. In our argument.
Wouldn't
here.
That just make it a tie if it wins, though?
Well, I guess we never really thought it through. Yep. No one said that we were good at this, but
triple or nothing, baby.
I guess if we go double or nothing and it does end up becoming an even thing, then we'll get Lauren back in here to just make a final decision.
And if we all agree that it's a no way, it's a double or nothing no way. So it's even more no way. So then we all have to make a blood pact to never watch this movie again.
Oh, you can't do that to Andrew. You can't do that to Andrew.
You know what, though? I will do that. I will do it.
Dude, remakes included. If they redo this
you will never watch Disturbia.
Remakes are not included.
You're not allowed to watch Rear Window, and you're not allowed to watch any future Disturbias. You can't even listen to the song. No more Rihanna for you, buddy.
No more Rihanna. I know Andrew is getting into screenwriting right now. He's going to start his own version of Disturbia as soon as this podcast is over. He's going to type away for the rest of the night, be like, I'll show them. I'll show these
guys. Just want to be one of the guys.
I'll show them a less creepy voyeur.
It can work.
You can be creepy and get the girl.
Round 3.
My No Way comes at approximately the hour 24 mark of the film, but we're going to precede this No Way with a quick clip at 33 minutes into the film because I want to set up Mr. Turner as a killer.
They didn't catch the guy, but they found 7 chicks' bodies in a house a year after the alleged killer abandoned the property. No leads, no way of IDing whoever lived there because he used a fake name and probably a P.O. box because no mail was ever delivered to the house.
So that gives us the setup of Mr. Turner in his previous life in Texas. Apparently a very good serial killer, it seems. And we can assume that he's putting on the same strategy here. Now going to the hour 24 mark, we know the shtick is up. Kale knows that he is the killer.
The gig is up.
His gish is up, okay. And it's time for his comeuppance. So Turner then, for some reason, has... So the mommy goes over.
This is the first episode where I think we've created a language code. We have devil's avocado, the gish is up,
and mommy.
The gish
mommy.
Is up.
Mommy. Real specific... Disturbia language code that I really like that we're discovering.
This sentence, the gish is up, mommy goes over. Okay. And Turner, for some reason, decides to hit her face against a wall. He's now going to go after Kale, mom, the neighbor. We all know, hopefully everybody knows and sees the movie. After the clip we're about to watch too, he also kills a cop and he is clearly unhinged at this point of the story. So let's watch the clip.
All I wanted was to live in peace. Write this down. Dear Ashley, I killed Ronnie.
My no way is that there is no way that a cold-blooded, precise, methodical killer that we've established would come up with this ridiculous, elaborate plan to frame Kale. And then further than that, once a police officer shows up, he would kill this cop and continue to rampage when clearly his jig is up. And I believe his gish is up.
Thank you.
I believe this guy, based on the evidence we've been provided and in any realistic manner of this situation happening, he would flee rather than continue to kill. There is no way he's getting away with this apparently brilliant plan he's coming up with on the spot. Why does he start going through this huge plan to kill everybody, stage it? And to me, it just doesn't make sense with this killer's previous record.
Every serial killer becomes unhinged at some point. Everyone does. Like, so they all start making mistakes. They all start getting complacent. They all start becoming unhinged. So maybe the fact that he was hitting on his mom, that he knew that Kale suspected him earlier on in the movie when he was cutting his bagel, opened the fridge, closed the door, there he is, boom. And it was all weird in that jazz. Maybe it was more personalized for Mr. Turner this time around because he'd been killing redheads, which is that was his MO. He was killing redheads. He didn't really know. None of the people he was killing was super personal, if we're talking about like serial killers. Not personal in the sense that like they knew them, but it was, you know, they had their own fantasies. But in this case, he got caught by this neighborhood kid who was on house arrest. Those kids caused him problems that he had to flee from Austin to this new place. He's been there only for 3 years. And, you know, they're breaking into his house. These are things that, like, for a methodical person, he didn't foresee happening. That maybe he just fucking lost it.
I killed my way into this problem. I'm going to kill my way out of it.
You know what I'm saying? So way.
This is an unstable base. No matter how regimented or efficient they are as a serial killer, there's clearly still something very wrong with them.
And so, he knows that, like, if you're basing it on the earlier clip, Mr. Turner isn't Mr. Turner. It's all, like, he's done the same thing over again. So if he can get away with a night of rampage and he disappears, they have no way of tracking him again.
Now, I don't think he's going to get away with it. I think it's really short-sighted. You know, there's enough people and enough fingers have been pointed at him that he has a car that matches. That, like,
once he killed the cop, that fucked.
Yeah, and once he killed, and that's a big thing too. So this is the argument though. Then is after he kills that cop in his own home. Clearly, the police are now looking at his house twice in one night. They've come to his house. He knows he's got bodies and a fucking lair under his suburban home with a murder room. Like, it's pretty close. The fact that he doesn't burn that house to the ground and leave indicates that he has snapped, that he's no longer the efficient, careful, regimented murderer, that we're now dealing with someone who's gone over the edge and they're not thinking clearly. I see Mike about to say something. I'm just going to insert one little piece. That the other thing about the MOs of serial killers is that very often a big part of them wants to be caught because they want the validation and acknowledgement, and they push it. They start to push what they think they can get away with further and further. So that the fact that he is, not only has he been a serial killer, but he keeps it all in his suburban home. It's not like he has some sort of shack in the woods. He's doing it all under the eyes of the entire neighborhood. He lets that girl show up in her own car at his home. And then does that cross-dressing thing where he drives it away. But, like, there's something to the fact that he's escalating because maybe he's getting to that point where he's pushing to see how much he can get away with. And he thinks, I'll make this murder-suicide thing in my next-door neighbor and see if I can get away with it.
100%.
Yeah.
This is, like, I've been sitting here and that's, like, the thing. It's funny. I was like, I'm going to bring up this basically what you guys are saying. And then you just started to do it anyways. I'm like, here we go. Okay, great. They're discovering exactly. Like, when you're at the top of your game, you got nowhere to go. You know? So this guy has been a successful serial killer for so long. As you said, he's willing to push the boundaries. And so we have Mr. Turner here who has clearly aware that Kale and his friends are watching him throughout this and they're onto him. Hence the visit to the house during the bagel cutting. Hence the talk to Ashley in her car. Like, he's very aware that this is a problem that he has to deal with. But I think he's also enjoying the challenge. He's seeing an actual challenge and like an exciting update to his killing career in a way. But I do think there's a real element that this guy is such a successful serial killer that he's like, I bet I can fucking get away with this. And this is way more interesting to me as a killer than murdering another redhead and putting her in a body bag in the basement. I think I'm fucking really good at this. And it's getting boring just doing the same killing I always do.
So it sounds good. Good.
He states his goal of being, I just want to live in peace.
Mm-hmm. All I wanted was to live in peace.
He wants to stay where he is. He likes his setup and really doesn't want to leave. Like, we can get that from his goal here. How do you get those goals is by actually not acting at all. Because as far as we know, the cops have come multiple times to the house. Nothing's happened. They don't believe the kid. You're sitting pretty.
I don't agree. I don't agree that he's sitting pretty because he's been able to get the cops to turn around this time. But what he knows he won't be able to squash is that kid knows. And that kid's going to keep trying. And so that means that he knows he's got this kid staring at him 24 hours a day. He won't be able to do anything. He won't be able to kill anybody else. And he knows that kid's got his number. And at some point, probably, they've already broken into his house once, something's going to break. So he's left with the two options of A, pull up stakes and move, or try and clear them out and try and get away with it. And I'm gonna step out now. I'm away. I think that he's at that point. I think that we're dealing with a psychopath and they're not stable. And I think that we're dealing with an unstable human being, and I buy it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're at the voting point because Kayvon put it really well. And especially going back to the point where you said, like, he doesn't want to move away. He set up shop really well here. He's got his crypt. He's not moving, guys. Do you think he had that fucking crypt in Austin? There's no way. He landed here and he's like, this is the fucking place. He's not giving it up. He's going to do everything he can to stay in that spot. I think there's a big way that he would do all this.
I'm going to go away.
It's a way.
Life finds a way.
I feel like we should acknowledge we got a stalemate. We got a push. Disturbia is a push.
I think so. I think that's fine. I think a tie is absolutely allowed.
Do you have any idea what I've just been through?
Hey!
Does anybody have a suggestion on what we call it? Like, is it a mommy?
Your mom's hot.
It's a devil's avocado. No, that's what it is.
It's a devil's avocado.
I like devil's avocado. Yeah. We got ourselves a devil's avocado right
it's
here.
It's a devil's avocado.
Oh.
Don't do that, baby.
The last part about our podcast here is our funometer. I'm going to give this one a nice 75%. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's a bit of like a teenager's wet dream. I really enjoyed it as a teenager. Still, it was still exciting to watch. Still gave me a little bit of anxiety watching this one. I think it's just a fun thriller.
Yeah, honestly, man, like I'd give it like an 85. I don't even remember when I first watched it. This might be the first time. Man, I just really enjoyed the nostalgia of the environment. It really took me back to when I solved a crime.
And saved your mommy?
Saved my mommy. I just really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the aesthetic of it all, I think. And I had a lot of fun.
I'm so sorry, Andrew. It's 35% for me.
Oh, fuck.
Ooh. I really disliked this movie. it was my first time watching it, so I had no attachment to it with my adolescence or like remembering it at a time in my life when I was younger. I'm a big fan of Rear Window, and I couldn't shake the poor comparison to Rear Window, which is a great film. And I was like, wow, this is really weak. It's Rear Window. Yeah, it's really terrible. Rear Window.
After watching it, like I actually haven't watched it in a while, but I watched it a bunch in high school. But I watched it for the first time in a while. I'd give it like to find some of them. I give it like an 8 out of 10. There are moments where I'm like, oh my god, like that's so cheesy or that doesn't make sense. You know, that's super creepy. There's a lot of super creeping going on in that film. But he's still like, even though he's a super creep and like his boredom took him to a place that was not okay, he still thought this guy was a killer. He was the only person to like come up with the fact that like, oh, this guy might be a killer. He was paying attention enough in the movie that he knew this guy might be the killer. He saved his mom. Yes, he put his friend wrong. He saved his mommy. I still enjoyed it.
It's cohesive.
It matches the whole story.
It fits.
Was Holes a way or a no way?
It was a tie again too.
Was it a put? So that's a double devil's avocado with Andrew. So that's really interesting. Two devil's avocados.
Andrew, thank you for being here. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. Thanks for doing this a second time with us. It was so much fun again, and we really, really appreciate you on here.
This is nothing but fun, guys. I hope this is a long, long journey for you guys, and I really appreciate you bringing me on. I really do.
That was awesome. And everybody, take care of your mommies.
What's wrong with me? Why do I feel like this?
Thank you for listening to this episode of the No Way podcast. No Way is produced by Markian Tarasiak, Kayvon Koshkam, and Mike Gill with the help of Speakeasy Theater and the Cinematics Creation Company. The show is edited by Kayvon Koshkam with original music by Ben Elliott. The No Way podcast is produced on the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Please join us next Friday for another exciting episode of No Way, and make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at No Way Podcast and Twitter at No Way Pod. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time at the movies.